This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs.
And thank all of you here and there for joining me in this. I only had a few hours sleep because I just didn't know what I was going to say. I've been sitting since 66 and Kobin ordained me in 80. And if you read my short bio, my life has been going from teacher to teacher, not in rejection to any, but just following my personal truth. And the teacher I'm with now that had me registered and formally received transmission in Japan is Akiba Roshi from Oakland. And his wife has always been a very good friend of mine, Yoshi. So there's... Jiro asked me to say something about Kobin, and I've been reading about him the last few days. And in honesty, I can't really say too much, because what I loved about him wasn't what he said. It was about his presence. And he had this reputation of loving children, but it was only later in my life that I realized it wasn't about children per se, but rather the quality of presence that children have. And there's a metaphor that I love, that ideally what we want to be actualized is the mind of an infant, but the wisdom of a grandmother. That innocence Kobin has. And all of you here and there, to some degree, also have that. And as I said to one of the students this morning while I was drinking my tea, I have to be careful and not lose myself in any level of arrogance, because I'm not here because I know more than you. Maybe I remember more. I don't know. But you know as much as anybody could possibly know. And Kobin highlighted that. What we're trying to do is remember. So this whole idea of becoming enlightened is ludicrous, because you already are by design. It's our nature. And I'll add to it that there's no shoelaces or stone or insect that isn't also enlightened, including, as Dogen said, anger realized is enlightenment itself. It's inescapable. It defines the reality that we are by design. And then there's another whole level. You have to go here for that. I've struggled with this that got me to sit. But most recently came to realize that this is inseparable from that. When I say that, I mean the space that we're all in. That's sacred. The stillness that this is where we want to mature. Waking up isn't an experience. It's stepping in and coming to a realization of our true nature, which is inseparable from everything. So everything is everything. Everything's connected. Everybody's right. And everybody's wrong. We navigate by what we believe or think. And that's an endless rosary of possibilities. Reality doesn't have a label. So if you subscribe to a label, you've already lost. Because this is not a label. What we're doing can't be labeled. Waking up, there are no labels. And years ago, I remember reading from some teacher that you will run into meet people that are already enlightened and they don't know it. Mm-hmm. And Jerome knows this from my stories with my friend who's getting a PhD in working with bees. And I was living up in Inglenook, north of Fort Bragg. And circumstantially, she ended up there with my cousin's son, who was on the road, and she was on the road hitchhiking. And those two got together way up north. And they called me and asked if it would be okay if she could come along with him to stay with me for a few days, which they did. And I didn't realize it initially, but before she left, I had a sense that something was about her. So we agreed to get together when she came back to work on her doctorate with the chairperson that was helping her with it. And other than teachers that were awake, and people to degrees of wakefulness in my life, we spent 3 days together. She stayed at, I'm with my ex-wife. We never separated as love, but the agreement with her, she never wanted to get married, but she loved me. I said, well, let's see how it works. And if it doesn't work, we'll dissolve it, which is what we did. But we never separated in the love. And about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, she was having a hard time and called me to come and be with her, which is where I am now. So it's an interesting relationship. And it's great for my practice because there's no reaching. And I love her. My friend from Australia, who was initially from Germany, but she's been studying there, we spent 3 days together. She worked it out so she could do that before she went back to Australia. And I can't say enough about what it's like to be with somebody that's fully awake. There are no labels. So we went to Point Lobos, we went to Big Sur, we went to La Pentes, no labels, not a one. Pelicans flying, rocks, stones, everything, but not a single, I could cry, not a single label. They say, well, you hit a blissful state or what? We weren't in bliss. We were laughing. Because all of this was gone. 3 days. No labels. And that was a really enlightening factor for me to know, to realize that waking up is dissolving the labels that separate us one from the other. And Coben mentioned something that I think is worth bringing up again. And this is a takeoff on a koan, how many fish are in the creek or how many fish are in the pond? One. How many people walking around the planet? One. And we're connected. And I've asked many times going into the department stores, whatever, have any of you ever noticed that everybody comes in at the same time? I've had this conversation a number of times with people, merchants working in the store, and they said, it's really weird. I said, I'm in the conviction that we're actually connected. So I can be driving and have a thought, and it gets out there. And 32 people will go in for a cup of coffee. You know, we've all done that, right? And that takes me to the one. And I have to be careful about this because experientially it's two and more. At the deepest level, in the space of it all, where everything is connected, there's only one human being. So my pain is your pain. And a lot of us, and I watch the news because I'm following it really closely, and I made a vow when I first start sitting, I don't know where this is going, but Bob's coming with me. I'm not leaving him out of this equation. I have no idea where it was going. And Bob is still very present. In my practice, I realized it was a lot easier to be human waking up to be Buddha than it's been to be Buddha waking up to be human. because we're not comfortable with having a body. Women know that. We don't know what to do with it. We really don't know what to do with our bodies. Being a guy, I've said repeatedly, I don't like it. Being a guy, really, it's really uncomfortable because there's so much that I have to walk around with. By design, I'm here to procreate. I'm driven to do that. I can't turn it off. I'm older, I'm 81. But when I was 20, 21, 22, going on a date, we take such a hit because it's in the DNA, it's one goal. And nobody's ever written a book about the hell that guys have to go through. I'm not talking about the jerks. I'm talking about those of us that really walked a straight line and were reasonable. I'll use that word. Because being a guy is really hard. And then there's the women. The beating that they've taken historically. I'm watching all of that. I see what's happening in this country. I really don't know where it's going to go. None of us do. So the question that comes up with a few students that I do have is, how do you manage it? Poorly. Really poorly, because I will not turn away from what there is to be felt, because that's waking up. You have to feel what there is to be felt. And Stephen Batchelor wrote this, and I was very impressed with what he said about the foundation of what the Buddha had to say. And this is critical. After all these years of practice, this is really important. This short discourse can be summed up as follows. The Buddha declared how he has found the central path through avoiding indulgence and mortification. He then describes the four ennobling truths, those of anguish. And they say life is suffering. That hasn't been my experience. But anguish or discomfort, yes. It's not perfect, but then there's no such thing as perfect. And the best metaphor I can come up with, we're all sitting on a wagon, and each wheel is off center, so the wagon is constantly doing this. I don't care what you're doing, where you are, what's going on. That wagon's doing this, and if you don't acknowledge that, accommodate reality as it is, and feel what there is to be felt, something will happen in the course of the day, and that wagon will show up in your mind, and you'll just get so off the chart in frustration or anger, because that's sitting there constantly grating on you, and you can't get rid of it. It's just part of life. And my conclusion is, because we live for perfection, and you'll never find it, because that's a definition and there are no labels. So we live with so much unnecessary grief because we don't really get close to what's actually going on. And what caught my attention was this, was he then described four ennobling truths, those of anguish, its origins, its cessation, and the path leading to its cessation. Anguish has to be realized. Let me read it. Anguish has to be understood, its origins to be let go of, and its cessation to be realized. That is it. I mean, seriously, that is our practice. What I refer to, the laundry. I've been working on my dirty laundry, and one of the teachers said, well, waking up is easy, it's the laundry. All of that habitual behavior, this, it's not a problem unless it is. I'm with Nikki, something will come up, she'll say something, and I'll just like, and I'll say, whoa, stop. What's really going on? There's always something very personal going on. It could be something as a simple habitual behavior, something you've been doing for the last 50,000 years. It's still there. that your relatives did that you inherited, it's still there. And I remember what I was crying and crying and crying when I was sitting, releasing all of this, experiencing the release in tears. And I finally got through most of that, but I kept crying. And I talked to Kobe and I said, I'm still crying. And he says, those are your relatives. That's what they didn't deal with. It's in your DNA. It's the memory. And my internet teacher is Sadhguru. And I picked up two of his books, one on death and one on karma and memory. There's nothing that isn't based in memory. On a cellular level, it just goes on and on and on. So Coben said, keep crying. I didn't know where it was coming from, but I'd just be sitting. I wasn't bawling. I'd just be tearing. And just these waves. Till it finally burned itself out. The laundry, if nothing else, with this talk today, it's the laundry. What we are by design is unbelievably otherworldly. And it's not otherworldly. It's just that we forgot. So what I said earlier, it's about remembering. What prevents us from actualizing that is the habitual behavior. I don't like this. I hate that. Why doesn't she shut up? Blah, 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 blah. Always something. Always. Always. It just doesn't stop. And the ego is a real rascal because he or she doesn't ever, ever get enough attention and is never satisfied. So our attention's been hijacked by our egos. There's actually nobody there but a box of memory. And it looks like somebody's there. And the ego knows there's nobody there. And it's hypersensitive to being seen in that light. So it's constantly defending itself. Aggressively, it'll do whatever it needs to do to be confirmed, to get the attention it wants, and to satisfy its insatiable appetite for more. That's, for me, what defines the ego. Who we actually are includes that. So the ego's not a problem. Undisciplined, like a little child it is, running around screaming, hollering, so the adult doesn't have any control. The adult being your true self. So what does a true self do? Well, it deals with the child, which is the laundry. So I don't care what it is that comes up. Feel it. And this is from the Buddha. See it. Look for the seed. It's always personal. It's like a nighttime dream. This is a daytime dream. Nighttime dream, what happened to all the characters? Oh, I was dreaming, really. What happened here? I was dreaming. There's only one thing going on, you. And it's boundless. Because there's nothing it's not. So, To cultivate that awareness, Buddha waking up to be human, it's really difficult to not judge, to not distant, to feel everything there is to be felt, to own it, and let it go. But it's critical that you feel everything there is to be felt. There's no off switch. And I don't care what it is that comes up. There's only one show in town that's been hijacked. You want to wake up? Walk in the park. Just don't lie. And I stopped lying years ago when I realized it wasn't about lying. It was that I didn't get to experience myself. because I was lying all the time, exaggerating, but lying. Why are you late? Oh, blah, blah, blah. Tell the truth. And the hardest lies to break are the innocent ones. Who cares? Somebody calls, well, why didn't you come? Oh, I didn't feel very good. I was, really? I don't want to come. Who's going to go there? So the virtue of that is you get to know yourself. And that's another thing that Goldman said. It's really hard to get to know yourself. Buddha says, or Dogen says, forget yourself. Not that. Forget yourself in identity. Forget yourself in identity and let go. Nothing has any place to go. There is no there. Everything stays. It's just how we manage it. Do we hold on to it? Do we water it? Do we embellish it? Do we deny it? Do we feel it? Another metaphor that I love, imagine yourself a cup and you're full to the brim of whatever you're walking around with, and somebody bumps into you, it spills all over them and you. Everybody gets covered with it. If it's empathy, they'll love you for it. If it's something else, and it could be something else that's not so comfortable, they get nailed. And you defend yourself, but everybody's slopping around in whatever ears you're full of. As the wagon does its thing, and you, oh, yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. Oh, I'm happy. Oh, yeah, I didn't do anything. Right? We all do that. The habitual behavior, things we learned along the way. Early on, I was blaming, blaming, blaming. There's still a tendency to blame. But there's only one thing going on. Why? We experience it as we do, dualistically. But in the depths of what's actually going on, being designed, this is, as somebody once said, it's all there as you see it, but it's not what it appears to be. It just isn't. So there's nothing wrong with this. It's just that until we wake up, we don't see what's actually there. We see the projections coming from our past and from our family's past. It goes on and on and on. So people say, what the hell am I supposed to do? We got all these problems. What am I supposed to do with all of this? My answer? The most important thing in your life, and I mean this, the most important thing in your life is what's in front of you. Because if it wasn't, it wouldn't be there. And you serve it. I don't care if it's washing a dish. It's stardust, washing stardust with a soap that's made of stardust, that's rinsed with stardust. And then we label, you want to put a story on that? You can. Or you can just wash the dish. I was talking, and Gerald knows that the contractor was working on that. We live in a cabin. He was working on it. And he really got all of his father's in Germany. They're from Germany. And his father sits all the time. He's a Zen practitioner. And he really got it. And I said, the most important thing in your life is that chisel. He says, well, the chisel. If you take good care of the chisel and do what the chisel was designed to do, and you're there completely, I'm telling you, the rest of your life will work out. It just will. Because you can only do what you can do. It's not a mathematical formula. Just do what's in front of you. Just do it with everything you've got. Mind comes in, that's fine. A thought realized is enlightenment itself. There's nothing that isn't enlightenment. Fine. Just go back to the dish. If you do that really well, your whole life slowly starts to come together. If we did it collectively, we'd be living in a different world. If you can imagine that. But stories trump. Stories are everything. Now, there's nothing wrong with a story, but if it's driven by an ego that's undisciplined, insatiable, well, that's a problem. But a disciplined ego that's quiet, that knows its place, that serves, while that core of our being has a lot more to say about our day than that. We're getting closer to home. We're not on a clock. We haven't been born and we're not dying. The algorithm that this is something else. We keep reading in the sutras, no birth, no death, no coming, no going. That defines our true nature. There's so much I don't understand. But I do know it's available now. It's about remembering. So the sitting is about the stillness. There's nothing in your sitting that's not enlightenment itself. Don't move. The stillness does all the work, all of it. You don't have to think, you know, just don't move. And I remember when the first part of my training was with the Rinzai, and they're serious about not moving. But when I was in Japan, so were the Soto temples. There was a kid that we brought, because we would take in kids that were unmanageable in the school systems. They had a choice. You go to some institution that's not a school, and we'll deal with you there, or you go to a Zen temple. So they would come in and sit with us, and they would be strutting around doing their thing. They would 2 weeks if the elders in the temple, the monks, the teachers, didn't believe they were ready to go, that they stayed another week. They always left crying. Because the first temple I went to, half of the monks were my age. They were retirees, guys that wanted to be monks. And you didn't have all the testosterone, you don't know all of that, I know more than you, all that stuff that comes with youth. It wasn't in the mix. Because it was a senior crowd. These guys already went through all of that. I loved sitting with them. It was so mature. And they're the ones that took these kids under their arms and worked with them. One woman, and my room was close to the door, and she had this guy that she was there for talking. And I said, well, she didn't get it, but they eventually let her go. But the boys that came in, they really got it. By the time they were leave, they chanted with us. They sat with us. I mean, we went to bed at 9. We got up at 3:30 for 3 months. Well, they didn't come in for 3 months, but it was pretty tight. And I remember the teacher saying, we haven't changed anything. That temple was built in 1200. We haven't changed a thing. You're doing what they did back in the 1200s. We haven't changed anything. I was so impressed with that. We don't have that practice here. We're on our own. So surrendering to what's in front of you, giving your whole life over to what's actually in front of you, and washing your laundry, anything that prevents you from being there. No judgment. You're not on a scale. See what comes up. And if you can trace the seed behind that, it's always something. That's what the Buddha was saying. You need to realize the seed of all of that and actualize it, release it. All of the energy that is released in tears. It happened for many years, just to all of that just re-experiencing what I pushed down. It was always about suffering, pain. I push it down. And I remember my sister said something. I was a kid. And it hurt. I remember the onions. My mother was working the stove and the summer breeze coming through in Detroit. And my sister said something hurt me. It came up so many years later. And I'm in tears. But I'm realizing it as an adult. Sitting. There's no beginning or end to any of this. I can't say enough in gratitude to be here with you. I could cry, but I won't. It's hard, but not doing it is harder. So just do it. There's no off switch. Feel everything there is to be felt. You already are. Nothing's missing. My first teacher said that Soen Rinzai, he was driving around New York and he saw these no vacancy signs. He said, hang a big no vacancy sign on your chest. You're full. There's no room. Nothing missing. You need to know that. Don't carry on like something's missing. Like, if only there isn't that, you're finished. The bread's out of the oven sitting in the counter. It's done. It just needs to be remembered. An infant comes in, they remember. And that's another story. I'll cut it really short. The therapist happened to be a teacher. And the woman says, my daughter wants me to leave the bedroom. A newborn's there and wants me to leave the bedroom so she can be with the little one. He says, well, you have a speaker thing. What do they call them? Yeah, just do it. The mother was shocked. The little girl, and they weren't practicing a religion. She was sitting, but it wasn't part of the conversation. And the little girl, she was about 3 or 4. She got on the bed, you know, with the sides that come up now, whatever that, whatever. And she's standing up. She could hear her standing up. She says, now tell me about God. I'm forgetting. Right? As a 3 or 4 year old. Tell me about God. I'm forgetting. When my father died, and he never complimented me. And that was something that I picked up along the way. Where anybody that didn't compliment me was my wake up call, because they can't take anything away from me. I'm already, so they can only take away what I believe or think. That's the only thing they can affect, because they can't actually affect me. And I lost it. I do that sometimes, but that's okay. It's about knowing. It's really about knowing you've already arrived. You know, the other thing I can do a little bit is sutras. You read some of these sutras, right? Almost any page. This is the 6th page, but I believe that was Wong Po. Just, you know, just as an example where it goes. As for the 6 paramitas and 10,000 practices and meritorious deeds, as countless as the sands of the Ganges, they are already here. You don't need to add them through cultivation. When conditions are present, practice. When conditions end, stop. If you aren't convinced this is the Buddha and you prefer to practice while attached to appearances, in order to achieve some result, this is a delusion and contrary to the way. This mind is the Buddha. There is no other Buddha. Moreover, there is no other mind. This mind is clear and pure like space. It is devoid of even the slightest characteristic. If you try to think or reason about it, you distort the reality of things and become attached to appearances. They go on and on and on and on with this. All of my real attraction to the readings is coming from the teachers that are awake. There's another characteristic of people that are awake. They're spontaneous. Kobin was spontaneous. He was supposed to come and sit Sashin and he wouldn't show up because something came up in his life. And I was really irritated, but only later I realized that rascal was being true to his life, and whatever was going on was much more important than sitting with us. And there was no judgment in that. He was just being true. Spontaneity is everything, because you're not being driven by an idea, a goal, a desire. It's what's in front of you. So the practice is really my experience at this stage of my life is just the laundry continues to keep coming up, but not like it was. And I catch it. And the sitting, I know what it's going to say, the sitting affords us some space. So we're not shooting from the hip like the cowboys. You don't do that. You've got a little space. It's like count to 10. Forget counting. Just sit. And before you know it, before you speak, you'll see like, whoa, I don't have to say anything. And then you'll make an alternative choice about acting differently. I won't do that. Maybe I should ask a question. Why did you do that? Rather than accusing them of something. Well, you know, I don't like that. Why did just slow down? If you can develop that kind of a practice, knowing nothing's missing, that you've already arrived, you're not going anyplace. The longest path you will ever walk is from your mind to your heart. It's done. All you have to do is take care of what's in front of you. Give it your whole life. It's the most important thing. And in the process, you might stumble on what is actually the most important. But in the biggest picture, it's still the most important. But on a lower, smaller level, it actually needs your attention right now. Pay that bill. You know, just do it. Or clean the room. You've been putting it off. But in the end, it's which is really everything. It's surrendering to our true nature, which wants more than anything to be where it is. This wants to be here. Our life, I was talking to my sister, they're all Catholic. They don't know anything about me. Just a few, but the rest of them don't because they're Catholic. And that's just like, I said, well, Dorothy, I know you believe in God, right? Yeah, well, you know where God is? Always right in front of you. You want to go to hell, you've got to get in your head. But if you want to serve God, God will always be right in front of you. So do whatever's in front of you. Take care of whatever's in front of you. Be kind to whatever's in front of you. That's where God hangs out. Silence, right? A belief system, stories. I have to be careful about that because historically we've had stories, American Indians did, everybody did. That's fine. When the story, I have to really, because we get lost really easily in this, especially with what's going on politically, they're all stories and they're not grounded. They're not even healthy. They're dark. But a belief system is what the ego thrives on. It's the ego is celebrating the camaraderie in the inclusiveness of the family, like the tribal primordial thing. It's got to be sweet to be around all of these deniers and just, yeah, yeah. That's primordial. That's tribal. It's got to be sweet. It's like gangs. What makes a gang popular? I can appreciate it. They'll take a bullet for you. Who in your family will do that for you? Just to put it in perspective, that's another whole level of a relationship. Do I support them? Of course not, given what they're up to. But I really get the tribal aspect of the gangs. They'll die for one another. They live for one another. We should be doing that from this domain. But how do we get there? I was watching the news hour, and there's this movement. I moved to San Francisco in the 60s. Musicians are starting to wake up and realizing they need to do what they did in the 60s, where the musicians are giving free concerts and getting out and really saying what needs to be said because people aren't paying attention. They're just not. They're really not. They're in the candy store waiting for whatever. Again, no judgment. It's really hard. It's really hard. I went to I've spent a month with the family in Michigan. Love them all. No vaccinations. Trumpers. I took off my mask. I had my vaccinations. And in tears, I said, I cannot be with them with my attitude. So I let it go completely. And I hugged everybody. And I told them I love them and I really did. I mean, sorry about the politics, but I never stopped loving you guys. And I had a ball. Fortunately, I didn't get sick. But they're not letting it go. It's an institution. I don't know what needs to be done. I just pray there are enough of us on the perimeter that aren't making any noise, that push comes to shove, we'll have an opportunity to stand up and be counted. Because right now, what's getting all the attention is what doesn't work. And we know that. To repeat myself, that is enlightenment. At the deepest level, it's a dream. We're all dreaming. We have nighttime dreams, daytime dreams. You want to be in hell? Go for it. You want to be happy? Go for it. We're calling all the shots. They're all based on choices. I make a choice. You make a choice. We all do. The collective. And I mentioned that at the party. I said, just know, I realize nobody's listening, but just know there's only one pot. And we're all throwing what we're throwing into it. And sometime soon, we're going to have to be eating from that pot. You want to be really mindful about what you're tossing in there. Because you may not enjoy the brew. And my sister said, two pots. I says, no, Dorothy, there's only one pot. It looks like two pots, but there's only one pot. And we're all going to take a hit if we're not careful about what we're doing. And that includes us. Yes. Oh, you were scratching. It is. I didn't hear any bells. It's 12:20. Is it time?
Tenzin will probably ring around 12, so there's plenty of time.
Yeah. So I could go on forever, but I'll keep saying the same thing. Was that a hands up? Yeah.
to work with the laundry metaphor, one of our serious practitioners here had us starting to collect the lint in the dryer and use it as starter fuel in our wood stove.
Oh, I like that. That's like Jerome, because he was at my house. We were going to sit, and I was outside to get a flower for the vase, and I said, it really bothers me. The flower is in bloom and celebrated, and I snip it for what? For myself? And he says, well, here you use petals that have already fallen. Oh, my God. So that's what we did. We got a little bowl, put the petals in there, and then have to kill the flower. For what? For me? Ooh. Right. I like that. That gets really personal, doesn't it? That's really good. And how do they use it? How do they use the lint?
To add it to the newspaper when we start a fire.
Oh, for the fire. Okay, good. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful talk. I really enjoyed the story about Govind, how he was so true and so spontaneous that he would forget coming to his sessions. I had heard that, and I always wondered why that was. Why would he miss the session?
The spontaneity.
Now it makes total sense.
Yeah, something would come up.
And I had a few comments and a question as well.
Yes, go ahead.
So I wanted to comment on the label thing. We talked about how we get lost in labels, but then it came to me that even labels are enlightenment. The teachings are labels.
Yeah.
Is a label.
Yeah, it's not a problem having labels.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just sharing.
Oh, you're sharing. Okay, thank you. Okay.
That in a way that everything is a label and everything is not a label as well. So it's like a very tricky business trying to reject or accept labels.
Yeah.
And then it also came to me about perfection. That I feel like it's so true what you said about perfection, that like wanting perfection is hell. But then but it feels like when we are sitting, we are trying to perfect our wisdom. And enlightenment is like perfection of wisdom. And so I guess perfection is wanting perfection without wanting it, or without being attached to it. And it's like a striving, it's like the Prajna Paramita of keep going without being attached. So that came about perfection. And then about body, what you said, and I felt like even the five, like body is one of the skandhas, right? Like body, we feel our body. And so it's like that touch feeling. It's like one of the skandhas, and like, and hearing is that, seeing is that. I feel like the dharma even enters to the body itself, you know, like the musicians we talked about. They're like, good music is like dharma, right? Like extremely good music is dharma. And like with bodies, you can dance with your body. And like a good dance is also a dharma, because that's rhythm. It's like attuned to the divine in a way. And there was like Bharat Muni who came up with this like 108 dance forms by the Nataraj. Shiva used to dance it. And I was like reading Sadhguru, and he was mentioning that, like, that is a dance which leads to enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Gurudev also had something
mm-hmm.
on that. And so just, I wanted to say that on body, but yeah, it can be terrible to us sometimes, especially when it's bad health, but body is also a gift.
It's a gift.
For the dharma. Yeah, and it was, your metaphors were really wonderful. And so thanks for saying that. And then the question that arose was, on ego and what you said about attention, that ego wants attention. It's like it wants it endlessly. And that's true. And then I wondered why that is, because it seems to be the case that attention is all there is, right? Awareness is samasati, as the Buddha said, is emptiness, and that's awareness, and that's our true nature. So the question that arose is that why does the ego want attention? And it seems like that even the Buddhas, even Sadhguru, he wants attention. Buddha wanted attention when he was giving his first sermon, and Sadhguru wants attention. And so it seems like there's like two types of wanting attention. It can be good or bad. And so if you could say more on that, like.
Well, the question isn't about attention per se. It's what are you going to do it when you get it? Are you going to embellish yourself? You compliment yourself with your attention? Or are you going to do something for the rest of us? What are you going to do with the attention? There's no getting rid of attention.
So
we pull the attention in, because if I want to plant trees, I need a lot of attention to get everybody's attention to plant the trees. But if I want the attention just to compliment myself, well, that's something else. That's not going anyplace. That's just embellishing what I think.
Does the ego want that?
Well, I said earlier, there's nobody there. It's a database. But it looks like there might be somebody there, and we construe it as we grow up. And it's an illusion that there's actually somebody there called me. He's got a birth certificate and all that. That's been your true nature has been hijacked by that, and it's not a problem. It's just that it's a spoiled child that has this insatiable appetite to be in control, and it hijacked our attention. The only way you can actually resolve anything, see anything, is where you focus your attention. It's like the beam of a flashlight. It's very narrow, it's very broad, but your attention is like the beam of a flashlight. And the ego wants all of it.
And why is that?
I can't answer that. I can't answer that. Not really. I could speculate, but even if I could answer it, it's not going to change the condition. It's still going to go on and on and on. So the real question is, why would you want to continue to do that yourself when you agreed by what I said earlier that there's a lot more going on just to be human that needs a lot of attention? so that that can be actualized on a daily basis. So, yeah.
Thank you.
And I'll get to you if there's anybody out there, okay?
Yeah, thank you again for what you presented. It's really enlightening. I'm back on the Trump party. If there's a cliff in front of you, what keeps me from walking over it?
Well, it's really personal.
Like you said, you start hugging them and asking, well, it's not like that, like walking over a cliff. I mean, what keeps me from, if it's in front of me, what keeps me from walking over a cliff?
I dealt with that. I was in tears when I decided I could not be with them in my state of mind. I had to get over myself. And if I died because of that, I was willing to do that.
Hmm.
Experiencing my love with them was more important than my survival. I crossed that line on the way there. I was in tears. And that's when I let it go. I was willing to die to love.
You answered me. Thank you.
Yeah, the love is everything. And it doesn't have a look. I'm not even sure it's a feeling. It's just, it's very important. Anybody there, out there in the world, you have any questions? If not, good. Anybody here? We're good?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you. I really enjoyed your talk so much. Just very refreshing. Really resonate.
Yeah, thank you. It's from my experience. Okay. It's not from the books. I read a lot. And I can add something. I really took a hit. I came in with a lot. And I just figured I must have been a real ass along the way, because I came in with more shit than you could even imagine. And it was really hard. So when I decided to work with it, the rest was resolved. And at one point, I was 28, and I was on a Norwegian freighter. Jerome knows the story. I was in hell. I was in a Norwegian freighter. I was in Europe for 3 months. And I went there to see if the people were anything like the people here. I mean, is there actually a different people? And there wasn't. They have different things to gripe about, but they're just people. Different reasons to be miserable, but just people. Because I thought maybe there's a country of people that would be different. It's not, they're all just people. Like I said in the beginning of this talk, there's only one. So I was miserable without going into details. So I waited till it got dark because I was going to jump, and I didn't want them to find me if they saw me jump. I was going. And I bowed to my rucksack, 3 months of traveling. We were on our way to South America from Emden, Germany. And so that's the whole story. And I waited till it got dark, bowed to my back, thanked it for being my friend, serving me, working with me. And then I went topside and walked to the front of the ship. And it was just, you know, because I knew that the bridge was up there, they would have seen me up there. So I wasn't being crazy. But from the corner of my heart, I looked up to the sky and I said, if there's anybody out there, what is this? Gone. Completely went away. Bob was gone. I realized water's not wet. Boats don't float. There's no up or down. That's all relative to something else. But in itself, water's not wet. Those are labels. That was my first experience of labels. no tears, but I realized there was nothing I wasn't. I completely went away as a self-reference, completely. But I was still going to jump. I went there for that, so I was being true to my goal. And the dolphins were swimming, and it was phosphorescent. I can never remember the name of the animals that in the ocean. And I was absolutely beautiful with this rolling blue light. And there must have been a half a dozen of them, maybe more. Absolutely gorgeous light show. So I'm looking over the edge, and I'm just reflecting on, well, I'm sure my body will never reach the bottom because all of this, I'm like 5-6 miles deep. And by the time that hits the bottom, whatever's out there looking for something to chew on, munch on. And I was getting ready to jump. And then I had this insight. It's like, wait a minute. My suffering isn't organic. They can't eat that. The ocean can't consume my pain. That won't go away. And that's when I realized there is that aspect of what we are that has been here forever. And that's the one that's crying to be seen and realized and actualized. That's why we sit to get there to that. That was when I started doing my laundry to resolve the suffering. Because I was like, ain't going away. And I tell anybody, what would they say? Well, what do you think the future looks like when you die? And I said, well, I don't know. What does it look like when you get up in the morning? It's just whatever you are doing will be what you're doing till you stop doing it. There's no off switch. So if you want to change, change. If you don't, screw it. It's called hell. Go for it. It's just a dream. It may not be much fun, but who's counting? It's unbelievably personal. You want to be in heaven? The Polish Pope said it. He says, I was really surprised to hear it from him. And he says, heaven and hell is a state of mind. I said, whoa, it's coming from the church. Heaven and hell is a state of mind. So if you want to be in hell, go for it. Just do it. No loss. It's not much fun. You want to be in heaven? Go for it. It's a hell of a lot more fun, a lot more pleasant. You're going to take a beating. People will reject you. They'll go on, yeah, that's your laundry. They can't actually hurt you because you're beyond that. But it needs to be realized to actualize it. So again, the laundry. So I have so much respect for suffering. You know, we took a vow to be the last one on the train. And this is years ago, I had a talk with Yoshi. I said, I think suffering really has its place. If it wasn't for suffering, I wouldn't move. I mean, there are two factors that move us along. One is love, which pulls us, and suffering pushes us. And between these two, we move. But if there was no pain, I don't know if I would do anything. I don't know. My one goal was to do nothing really well. And I've gotten really good at it. I really have. So my mind, because of my mind, it's no longer doing loops. Bob is no longer in the equation. I can talk about what it comes, but Bob's not on the rudder. You're holding the rudder with me. And we all know that, because this is coming from that. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. If you appreciate what I'm saying, is because you're remembering. You already know this, all of you. You already know it. I'm validating what you already know through my own experiences. So this has nothing to do with me. I'm just saying what you already know to encourage you to validate and trust who you actually are. Who you actually are is so far beyond anything we could possibly imagine. And never forget, this is a daytime dream. It's identical to a nighttime dream. When you die, all the characters are gone. When you wake up in the morning, all the characters are gone. It's a dream. And it can be hell or it can be heaven. Labels. Well, there was one other thing I can add. It's not about, you go back to the labels. It's not about, you know, the labels, you know, you've got a banana and you go below the skin and then you go, it keeps going and going. So what is it? You know, like you're a human being, but I keep going further and further. Well, there's a spleen and on, it goes on and on, right? So where's the label? Well, for convenience, we say you're a human being. But if I really want to get really, there's an endless list of labels that you are. So we remove all the labels, you're still going to be there. Nothing changes. But we navigate with labels. So if you can get away from that and just be where you are, completely surrender to what you're actually doing, you don't really need to think dish, dish, dish. Just wash it. Just do what you're doing. And you turn around, there's something else will be in front of you. The path that we're on, this practice is phenomenal because it's unbelievably pedestrian. We embellish it to no end, breathing labels into it but it at core is just getting us back to our true nature, which already exists. So it's really just, I keep saying, it's just the laundry. It's that habitual behavior that prevents us from realizing or being where we actually are, which is here. This is this space here. This is really quiet. This right in front of me, that's life itself. You want to be here. This wants to be here with the rest of your body. Here, it's unbelievably quiet. This can be quiet. And when this is as quiet as that, you're home. You're home. And you'll know it. You're free. You're home.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.